the remote setup we have here at the Valdez Civic Center. The topic tonight is the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation public meeting. It's on incineration and or reclamation of oil-contaminated solid waste from the Exxon Valdez oil spill. DEC is currently having a range of meetings this week. Last night, they met in Anchorage. They had just less than 100 people attend, maybe 12 testified. And there were a fair number of questions, is essentially what I was told by Bob Flint, who is the DEC hearing officer. And essentially more of the people that talked were concerned about toxic waste in the air from the incineration than those who were in favor of it. The agenda for tonight says that first we'll have procedures told to us about granting air quality control permits to operate. They'll tell us about the time frames, the proposed restrictions. That'll be presented by DEC's John Sandsted, who is the air toxic specialist. After that, the agenda says that they're coming in about 5 or 10 minute increments, that they're changing speakers. Exxon Company will talk about their solid waste disposal plan, incinerator siting criteria, operational time periods, project duration. Then we have a series of contractors, AET, All American, Sealy, and Shellsteed, who will describe their facility and their air quality protection. Now, all four of these are under consideration. A representative from Shellsteed told me that actually Exxon is looking at Sealy and All American proposals. I guess they already had contracts with them from before, but he's trying to sell them on a recycling barge that he has. And there's a display model over on the side, and he's prepared to tell everybody how it works and how much they get back and how much less they actually burn. Around about 7:40, when the contractors have finished with their presentations, ADEC and EPA representatives will be providing an informal question-answer period. That's at any time if you wish more specifics from the contractors, if you wish more clarification about the things that have been presented since 7 o'clock, that would be the time to do it. So if you're out in town and out in the sunshine someplace, if you have some questions you want to ask, about 7:40 is the time when you want to be here. Then at 8:30, excuse me, at 8:30 is when we will begin the actual formal public testimony. Now, if you don't feel right about sitting up in front of people and being broadcast all over the radio, in order to make your comments, you can also write your comments. So as this goes along, if you learn information that you want to make specific remarks about, it would be good to jot those down. And right now, you might jot down the address where these comments should go. Your written comments will be included in the record if they're received before 4:30, the 31st of July. They should be addressed to the Air Program Coordinator, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, South Central Regional Office at 3601 C Street, like cat, C Street, Suite 1334, Anchorage, Alaska, 99503. That's the address for any written comments that you would like to make on this. But do feel free to come down and make your testimony this evening in front of the other Valdezians that are here, and so everybody can hear you if you'd like. We have, 10 minutes ago, there was nobody in the room but me. Now it looks like we have maybe 25 people assembled. Some of those, of course, will be those who are presenting their projects for consideration. But most of them, I think, are here to observe. It looks like we're about ready to start. Our DEC hearing officer and our air toxic specialist are seated up at the front at the microphone. And our court recorder is making sure she gets the last of her cords connected so that she can record all of this. That's how they managed to get it on the public record. In other incinerator news, City Council talked about the three incinerators that are currently in use out on Dayville Road last night at the City Council meeting. they've decided that they will contact DEC personnel to see what help and expertise DEC can give to the city, but they will also be looking at hiring their own contractor to do daily monitoring in the city of the air quality here. What we're talking about tonight are not those three incinerators out of Daydale Road, which are sometimes referred to as the hospital incinerators, because those had been degraded for use at hospitals. That's why they're called that. And so they didn't need a permit to begin using those. What we're talking about tonight are barge floating incinerators that will require permits. No permits have been given to date, and they will not be until this hearing process is complete and you have time to make any written comments.
I'm with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and I'm here tonight to conduct a public workshop and a public hearing regarding some incineration issues based on four permit applications that have been submitted to us. And hopefully you have had an opportunity to sign in as you came in. And well, I'll give you a brief kind of idea of how we're going to be running the meeting to move it through so we can get your questions answered as best we can at this time. Go ahead and take any testimony you have, and then be able to go ahead and proceed on and join the beautiful evening. If you happen to pick up a copy of the agenda, what we plan to do first, I'll introduce a DEC representative. We'll make a short presentation, followed by Exxon, then the four applicants, four permits. We'll make a short presentation regarding their application and proposal. Then we'll open up for just an interaction discussion, questions that you have that we may be answer here from the applicants, as well as our staff from DEC, and we have some experts we brought up from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency from Seattle and North Carolina. They're experts in the fields of some of the air pollutants that could be emitted in incineration to help answer any questions you may have here this evening. Following that, we will then go into a formal hearing where you then will have the opportunity to testify regarding these applications, things that you wish to make sure that we consider in the evaluation of these permits while we're making a determination what will happen. Will the permits applications be approved? And if so, what type of stipulations will be placed on those? So we'll open that after the informal interaction back and forth. What I'd like to do at this time is introduce John Sandsted. Was at the projection screen up here. John is air toxic specialist with the Department of Environmental Conservation. He's located in our Juneau office normally. John?
Are we live? Okay, there we go. As Bob mentioned, the reason we're here this evening is to address Exxon has elected to incinerate at least a portion of the waste generated during the cleanup of the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and an Exxon representative will outline their solid waste disposal plan and outline how incineration will fit into that plan. The individual incinerator vendors will also have an opportunity to show their facilities and to describe what air quality protection equipment will be installed. Besides the four permit applications that we're reviewing now for barge mount facilities, Exxon is currently using two other incinerator facilities, one here in Valdez on Dayville Road, and the other one, the North Slope Burrow incinerator up at Prudhoe Bay. Kind of as an introduction, I thought it might be a good idea to go over some of the basic vocabulary that will be appearing through the discussions this evening. The three basic regulatory tools that we have available to help control air quality or manage air quality in the state. The first tool are ambient standards. These are standards that set a maximum concentration of a maximum allowable concentration of air contaminants in the air that we breathe. It's the air that we as members of the public have access to. Emission standards are standards that put limits on the concentration of contaminants in the smokestack or exhaust pipe of a facility. For incinerators, there are two emission standards on the books right now in the state of Alaska. There are emission standards for particulate matter and for visible emissions. The particulate matter standards apply to facilities larger than 1,000 pounds an hour. The visible emission standards, which is an assessment of how opaque the plume coming out of a smokestack appears, those visible emission standards apply to every incinerator in the state, regardless of size. There's another regulation that applies also to all types of facilities, not just incinerators, but it's a prohibition of any emission which is demonstrated to be injurious to human health. The third regulatory tool we have is the permit. The permit gives the department a chance to put restrictions or conditions on the operation of a facility to ensure that the ambient standards and the emission standards won't be violated. It also typically requires a facility to either do certain types of monitoring or to fulfill certain reporting requirements so that we can ensure that the other types of standards are being met. The emission estimates for facilities are dependent on the characterization of the waste stream. Exxon proposes to burn basically two types of waste. The first is a solid waste comprised mostly of plastic sorbent booms or sorbent pads and associated materials used in the cleanup. The second material consists predominantly of oiled sand and gravel. Our evaluation of the four incinerator applications in hand now and the existing facilities at Dayville Road and at North Slope Borough indicate that all of the facilities can meet the current existing standards for particulates and visible emissions. Our evaluation of the waste stream, however, did raise additional concerns about the potential for emission of additional air contaminants that are not currently regulated. The two target contaminants that were identified after examination of the waste stream included hydrogen chloride and chlorinated dioxins and furans. There's a lot of data out there characterizing these emissions from municipal solid waste incinerators and also from the incineration of certain types of hazardous waste, but unfortunately we couldn't find a lot of information or any information to really characterize these unregulated air contaminant emissions that might result from burning this type of waste material. So this waste material is unique. At DEC's request, we asked EPA to provide some technical assistance in the evaluation of the waste stream and of the incinerators or combustion technologies being proposed to deal with the waste stream. And as Bob mentioned, there are several gentlemen from EPA in Seattle, North Carolina, and some representatives of Midwest Research Institute in Kansas City here to they've been in Alaska for about a week now, helping us evaluate the waste stream and the incinerator technologies. The evaluation led to us narrowing down to some target air contaminants, those being particulate matter, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, the other two unregulated ones, hydrogen chloride and total polychlorinated dioxins and furans. And what we propose to do is establish emission limits for all of these air contaminants and for the unregulated air contaminants, to establish emission limits based on what we feel is achievable with applying good combustion practices and with good flue gas treatment. This being more or less defining what's achievable with state-of-the-art combustion. There are copies of the proposed permit at the door. I'd encourage you to pick one up and take a look at it and to submit comments on that permit. The permit will contain the emission limits on the target air contaminants. It will contain monitoring requirements for both process parameters and for the emissions of concern. Each permit will contain operating restrictions which would limit the types of waste that the unit would be allowed to burn. There would be one-time emission testing requirements for the target air contaminants. There'd be weekly ash testing requirements as well. Those are detailed in the draft permit. And just try to finish up here by just outlining the time frame that we're talking about in review and issuance of these air quality control permits. The first step, of course, is the submission of an application. The department then reviews that application to determine if all the necessary information is there. If it's not, the department, ask for that information. It's quite typical that there might be a couple volleys anyway of information in order to make an application complete. Applications for the Sealy barge, the silo barge unit, and the AET unit, applications for test burns were determined complete. Those two units are under contract currently to Exxon, and we did start a coastal zone consistency review process on those permit applications, and we did that in order to expedite the permit review process. With the understanding also that the permit applications for ongoing operations would be made complete before any burning would be allowed to start. Currently, there's only a couple, none of the applications as of right now are totally complete for the ongoing operations. There are questions about whether the PSD provisions of the state regulations and the Federal Clean Air Act apply to the Sealy unit. PSD, or Prevention of Significant Deterioration, is a permit program which requires a more rigorous type of permit review, and it's required only if the facility is a garbage burning plant that emits more than 250 tons of a regulated air contaminant a year, or if it any incinerator facility that emits more than 250 tons of a regulated air contaminant. Only remaining questions with the AET application appear to be with respect to siting, and AET has indicated also that they will be supplying the department a more complete description of their process and emission monitoring systems, and we're awaiting that information. We suspect that they'll be completing that application very soon. There's been a lot of concern expressed by the public about emissions from this incineration. The department entered into a public comment period and a public hearing process, which you're participating in here tonight. The comment period's open June 27th. We're here to take your testimony here this evening, if you care to offer any, and we encourage you to submit written comments, if you have any, by July 31st deadline. By our own regulations, we're required to make a permit decision, either to issue a permit or to deny the permit within 30 days after all the information, including the public comment, is received. If these facilities are permitted, emission tests will be required within 2 weeks after startup, and the permit expiration date will depend on one main criteria. the emission limits in the permits are based on what's known to be achievable utilizing certain state-of-the-art combustion criteria or flue gas treatments. For the units that we feel are capable of or are representative of those criteria, we will be issuing permits authorized, which will require the testing, but would not require shutdown of the facility at the end of the test period. Those units that do meet the state of our criteria would be allowed to operate after the test period, and we would renew the permit upon acceptance of the emission test results. For units that don't meet all of the criteria because of equipment specifications, we will authorize a test burn period in order for them to demonstrate that they can achieve the emission limits in the permits. And they will be required to stop at the end of the test, but then they will be issued a permit renewal at the time that they provide the test results showing that they do comply with the emission limits. And I guess I invite Rob Dragnich from Exxon to go over Exxon's solid waste management plan.
It's fine.
On.
It will be.
Help. Good evening. My name is Rob Dragnich, and I'm the Alaska Engineering Coordinator for Exxon in Anchorage and responsible for regulatory and waste management activities associated with Exxon's Valdez spill response effort. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to discuss Exxon's solid waste management plans here tonight. There have been several public meetings in Valdez on this, as you know, but this is the first of those hosted by DEC and also the first time to take it to the larger Alaska public outside of Valdez. I think that our waste management plans have been the victim of a significant amount of misinformation, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to try and correct some of those errors here. Our overall waste management plans deal with the full spectrum of waste from the spill cleanup, including recovered oil and water, oily wastewaters from other sources, such as rainfall accumulation in the storage pits, domestic refuse or ordinary old trash, sanitary waste, and of course, the oily solid waste that we were proposing to dispose of in the incinerators. The handout provided at the door gives you an overview of our oily solid waste management plan. Since this meeting focuses on the offshore incinerators, I will restrict my comments tonight to the disposal of oily solid waste and try and explain to you how the offshore incinerators fits into that part of it. The second page of the handout describes our overall waste management goal for dealing with waste from the spill response effort, and I'd like to read it for you just to emphasize a portion of that. As you can see, it says to establish a sound operational program to handle and dispose of all spill-related waste in a safe, environmentally sound manner and in accordance with all applicable laws and regulations. I emphasize the applicable laws and regulations portion because there has been a lot of speculation and allegations that Exxon was seeking to bend the rules, to use loopholes, or otherwise circumvent the state's environmental protection laws. That is not correct. We are attempting to conduct all of our operations in strict compliance with all applicable laws and regulations, and we're coordinating all of our waste disposal activities with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and other agencies as required to ensure that we do comply. In developing the waste disposal plans, there were two specific solid waste objectives that I'd like to review for you. First, we wanted to minimize the overall pollution potential associated with transporting, storing, and disposing of the solid waste. We're doing this primarily by placing the oily solid waste into polyethylene bags, which are similar to heavy-duty garbage sacks. These bags are then placed in containers to prevent spills, control leakage, and facilitate the handling. Our second objective was to ensure that solid waste could be removed and transported to the disposal sites quickly enough to prevent the waste from backing up into the field and restricting or limiting the shoreline cleanup operations. As John mentioned, solid waste and spill cleanup take two principal forms. Within Prince William Sound, the wastes are predominantly sorbent bad and boom contaminated with crude oil. These are used extensively in the sound to both contain and recover oil. The pad and boom material is constructed of polypropylene and burns cleanly, leaving very little ash or residue. So solid waste from the Gulf of Alaska are significantly different. These consist primarily of sand and gravel that is collected when the tar balls are removed from the shorelines and beaches. As you'd expect, the sand and gravel is much heavier than the sorbent material, and consequently the total tons of waste material collected from the beaches in the Gulf of Alaska is higher than from within Prince William Sound. These materials comprise the majority of the oily solid waste that we have to deal with. There are a number of other items that we have within our waste stream that, that you should be aware of. These, of course, include the plastic sacks that are used to contain the waste. We have oiled clothing, rags. There's some non-repairable response equipment, such as containment boom. Of course, there are animal carcasses, driftwood, and the like. When considering incineration of the plastic sacks and sorbent materials, one should keep in mind that these are constructed strictly of polyethylene and polypropylene and do not contain polyvinyl chloride. The bottom of the second page in the handout provides you with our current estimates of solid waste quantities to be dealt with. As shown in the first column, we have disposed of a little over 10,000 tons as of July the 15th. The second column shows that we're forecasting total quantities to be disposed of in the range of 28 to 40,000 tons. I want to make sure you understand a couple of these numbers. The 10,000 tons that we've disposed of to date is through both lower 48 landfilling and incineration. In terms of incineration, we've only incinerated a little under 1,000 tons, around 900 tons to date. About half of that took place out in the Dayville Road site, and the rest of it was at Alyeskin at the North Slope Borough incinerators. Also, of the 28 to 40,000 tons that we'll be incinerating, or that we'll be disposing of, via the Gulf of Alaska, the vast majority of that really is sand and gravel. It's not a material that's combustible. There's only a few percent of that total quantity that really would be oil. The third page of your package shows the current oily solid waste disposal facilities under contract to Exxon. Under the shore-based incinerators, you see that we have three small incinerators located on the road from the city of Valdez to the pipeline terminal. These units are currently incinerating between 4 and 8 tons of oily solid waste per day. Although the units are below the permitting threshold required by ADEC, we have voluntarily submitted permit applications for those incinerators to ADEC and through the City of Valdez conducted source tests on them. These tests demonstrated that all three of the units' emissions were well below the standards required by ADEC, even for much larger units. We're also transporting waste to the North Slope Borough incinerator at Prudhoe Bay. The borough mixes the oil spill waste with their other industrial waste from the Prudhoe Bay area and is currently incinerating between 10 and 20 tons of oil spill waste per day. With regards to the offshore incinerators, we have contracted for two barge-mounted units to dispose of the oily solids. The first of these is a silo-type incinerator constructed and owned by the Sealy Corporation. The Sealy unit is expected to incinerate between 40 and 125 tons per day of the waste generated within Prince William Sound. This unit was chosen because of its flexible feed capability and abilities to handle a high BTU material such as the oiled polypropylene boom and pads. The second barge mount incinerator is of the rotary kiln variety and is provided by Advanced Environmental Technology, or AET. The AET incinerator is expected to incinerate between 100 and 125 tons per day of oiled sand and gravel. Its capacity on oiled sorbents would, of course, be somewhat less. This unit was chosen because of its ability to remove oiled sand and remove oil contaminants from the sand and gravel. The last item on this page shows the lower 48 landfilling disposal option currently being employed to handle the majority of the solid waste. The Anchorage facility has been operational for several weeks, and the Seward facility is scheduled to start up tomorrow. In these facilities, the oily solid waste are shredded and mixed with sorbent material to stabilize or tie up any free liquids. They're then placed in large 1.5 cubic yard super sacks, which are used as shipping and final disposal containers. They're placed into standard shipping vans and hauled to a landfill in the lower 48. As you can see, the capacity of those units is between 75 and 250 tons per day, depending on the type of waste being disposed of. The last handout of your package presents a flow diagram illustrating the different waste streams and waste disposal systems that we are planning to use. Starting at the top, you'll note that the Prince William Sound wastes, which are burnable, will go to the onshore incinerators at the North Slope Borough or in Valdez. When the Sealy Silo incinerator is permitted and operational, as shown by the dotted lines, we would also plan to dispose of waste in it. Although the oily wastes are not a hazardous waste, The ash from these incinerators will be segregated and tested to determine whether it by itself would constitute a hazardous waste. If it is, it will be sent to a lower 48 hazardous waste landfill. If it isn't, then it will likely be sent to local municipal landfills. Non-burnable wastes in Prince William Sound are largely the chlorinated materials such as PVC, the PVC rain suits, and some of the some of the pit liners and sand and gravel. These materials are segregated at a waste segregation facility on Dayville Road and hauled to Anchorage for transportation to the lower 48 landfill. In the Gulf of Alaska, the oily solid wastes are largely sand and gravel. Until this week, these were all sent to the Anchorage facility for shipment to the lower 48. With the facility in Seward starting up tomorrow afternoon, as I mentioned, we plan to send all the Gulf of Alaska waste to that site until the AET incinerator is permitted and operational. After it is, we would then plan to dispose of as much of the sand and gravel through the AET incinerator as possible. The remainder would then continue to go to the Seward facility and then to the lower 48. When siting these barge-mounted incinerators, we attempted to locate them as close to the area where the majority of the waste would be generated as possible, consistent with safety, marine logistics, and environmental concerns. We wanted to locate the incinerators in large but protected coves or bays to ensure that there was sufficient open space to allow air emissions to disperse, but at the same time allow the barges to be located in protected coves or bays so that we weren't subject to severe weather upsets and conditions. With these considerations in mind, Herring Bay in Prince William Sound was chosen for the Sealy unit, and Kukak Bay along the northern side of the Shelikof Strait was chosen for the AET unit. We are aware that there's some concern with the Kukak Bay site, and we plan to work with appropriate regulatory agencies to either resolve these concerns or to select alternative sites. Exxon currently plans to continue shoreline cleanup operations this year for as long as it's safe to do so, and that of course will be weather dependent. When the shoreline operations cease, we also plan to discontinue offshore incineration and demobilize the barge-mounted incinerators. At this point in time, all of the waste will have been hauled to onshore, and we don't think it's practical, prudent, or necessarily safe to turn around and haul the waste back offshore and try and continue an offshore operation into the fall and winter time. So we would plan to dispose of any remaining oily solid waste via the lower 48 landfills. Our intent is to dispose of all the waste this year. I would like to make one final note with regard to incineration as our preferred disposal method. Incineration was not chosen because it's the cheapest thing to do, as many have implied. Rather, it was chosen because we think it is the most environmentally sound and provides the best long-term solution to the problem. We think destruction of the waste by incineration is preferable to putting them in landfills, which never really disposes of them. It leaves them around for the future generations to deal with. We are attempting to recycle as much of the waste as possible, but that simply isn't practical for most of the oily solid waste that are collected from the shorelines. We also believe that storing the waste for a long period of times while seeking for other technologies or methods to recycle them is not really an environmentally sound thing to do. We think there's a significant amount of secondary pollution potential associated with long-term storage. Appreciate the opportunity to discuss our waste plans and hopefully clear up some of the misconceptions that you may have heard.
Thank you, Rob. Could you join us here for the panel?
Sure. Right now?
Well, we'll go through, but rather than back and forth, we'll just pull up a chair. And as we ask each one of the representatives from the four applicants to speak, then as they finish their presentation, if they just join us at the table, then we'll be able to work right into the workshop. The representative from Advanced Environmental Technology, whichever that one or that one, whichever you want to.
That won't go too far.
If you want to walk that one. Pacers get to use that one.
Thank you. My name is Robert Goff. I'm Vice President of Advanced Environmental Technology, and I represent management with Advanced Environmental. I just wanted to make a brief opening statement and tell you some of the things that our company is concerned with, some of the things that I think you have concerns about, and then I'd like to turn it over to some people that we have within our company that I consider experts on the subject and let them address your specific concerns and the details of our unit. First of all, I think that the issues that we raise here tonight are important. The issue here is communications. I think that once we have brought the facts out about these things, you'll have a better understanding about what we're talking about. We'll have a better understanding about what you're talking about. And that's what these trips that the department has arranged are all about. Advanced environmental standpoint on the issues of waivers and exemption are that we ask none. We don't seek any waivers. We don't seek any exemptions. Our policy has been, is, and will be to meet all the state and federal standards as they exist. We feel that we have, as you've been told here tonight, a state-of-the-art unit. We feel very strongly about it, and we hope that we're able to present to you this evening the information so that when you leave here, you will feel the same way. The unit that we have has no liquid discharge from it. We have only two points of discharge from the unit. One is the solid waste after it's been processed, and the other is the air. And as you know from the point of these hearings tonight, the air emissions are the subject that we need to be most concerned about here tonight. We have the in place the systems for providing the emission monitors that you're going to need to make sure that the ongoing operations are conducted and maintained within the parameters of the federal and state regulations, that safety is assured. We also believe very strongly in stack testing, and we're prepared to do that. That said, I think that pretty much tells you where our company stands on those issues. I'd like to introduce you to two people that will be here tonight to address your specific questions. If the format does not permit us to completely answer all of your questions, these people will be here after the meeting, and we'll take your questions to make sure that everybody, when they leave here, has had an opportunity to ask their specific questions and get their answers. First of all, we have Mr. Pete Kennedy with CK Associates. CK Associates is the company that we use that handles all of our permit applications. Secondly, Mr. Jerry Maudlin with Fisher Klosterman. They are a well-known company that designs air pollution control equipment, designed the air pollution system for this unit. He was the designer who designed the equipment for this specific unit. So I'll turn it over to Pete and let him take it. Do you want to be a pacer?
Just take that. All right, we have a brief time to talk about a complicated subject, but we won't linger too long. Advanced Environmental has a state-of-the-art incinerator unit that happens to sit on a barge sitting out here behind the building tonight. In a brief fashion, let me just tell you the basic parts of it. A rotary kiln is just a long tube that you can get very hot, and you introduce whatever it is you want to burn, and they are a workhorse animal. They'll burn almost anything. And this particular application, the crude oil residue that we're proposed to burn on this sand and gravel is a very simple fuel. That's all it is to us. It's not anything more than a very simple hydrocarbon that's fired at a hot temperature. Now, basically, the thing starts with a rotary kiln, which Robert has a diagram of basically what it looks like as it's put together. The first part of it, a very short part of the whole system, is the rotary kiln. All the waste is introduced into that rotary kiln and fired at a temperature of about 1,500 to 1,800 degrees. That's very hot. It stays in there a designated period of time, and everything that comes out of that rotary kiln out the bottom is an inert material, a sand, a gravel, something that can't be burned. Everything that can be burned, any type of hydrocarbon, in this case oil, is atomized in this thing and turns into basically a gas. It's all broken apart with some fine particulate matter in it. Particles of sand or things that don't burn up go into the next stage, which is a cyclone separator, which is a very pretty simple thing. It spins air around and slings particles out of it. It's very effective in taking particles out of gas. This thing can separate up to about 99% of the particulate matter that's in that gas at that point. Secondly, it moves into a secondary combustion chamber, which basically allows anything that's still not completely burned to burn again. And it's burned here at about 2,000 degrees. This one was only about 1,500 to 1,800. This stays in here a very short period of time, about two and a half seconds, but anything that has the possibility of being burned again will be burned at that temperature. Everything downstream from that is a series of a wet scrubber and then a packed tower scrubber that takes out sulfur contamination as well as nitrogen contamination. All of that's linked together in a very fancy format. It's mounted on a barge out here. The one issue that I'll leave with you on this one, and that's good, Robert, for now. This particular system is designed almost exactly like the one that EPA uses. They spend a great deal of tax money putting together a portable incinerator unit for hazardous waste destruction. This unit has been patented pretty close to exactly the way they built theirs. We did not intend to reinvent the wheel on that. Basically, the unit contains three parts again. We feed the unit. This particular thing has been permitted, or hopefully will be permitted, at 5 tons an hour of material. And all that we intend to do is contaminated sand and gravel. The unit then sends it into the rotary kiln, and the overall effectiveness of that rotary kiln to destroy anything that's a hydrocarbon-based material is about 99.99%. The real issue here tonight, of course, is what comes up the stack after it burns. Everything that you saw in the diagram is state-of-the-art as far as the ability to remove any kind of contamination that would result in something coming out that stack that would be harmful or even sightly. It generally, you will never see any smoke at all come out of this particular unit. The system is designed to meet standards. If we can't meet the standards that ADEC talked about tonight, then we won't be able to operate. That's what that system is designed to do. Alaska has on the books only three particular standards. Now, they've increased those standards particularly for this job, and we want you to know that the standards that are being proposed are about as strict as anything in the nation for any hazardous waste facility that's ever been made. Let me clarify, this is not a hazardous waste that we're burning here, but the standards that are being applied and apparently will have to be met are as rigorous as any hazardous waste facility in the nation now. An example of some of those standards that EPA could apply to this, and many of those have been applied. The unit itself is designed to meet an opacity of 20%, which meets the state standards. A nitrogen, a sulfide of 250 and 100 ppm, respectively, particulates of 0.04 grains, and hydrocarbons of 70 ppm. Those aren't very interesting numbers, only to say that the unit is designed to do better than what the state is asking us to do. The way that you, once you apply a standard to an incinerator unit, that's just numbers. How do you know that what's happening out there in the field is, in fact, okay, that it has met the standards? There are a couple of particular ways to do that. Continuous emission monitoring is one of those ways that has been suggested by ADEC as a way to control this. We are prepared and have, they are not on the stack today, but we are waiting to get the exact parameters we need to meet on that. But nitrogen, sulfur, total hydrocarbons, carbon monoxide, and oxygen will all be monitored on the stack every minute, a continuous monitoring episode. That is a very rigorous requirement to be applied to this job, but we're prepared to do it, and nothing will be fired unless the standards are met for those particular items. Stack testing, we totally agree with that. If I tell you that I've got a unit that can meet all the standards, but I never test that thing as it's fired up, then all that is just talk. What ADEC has asked to be done on these incinerators is that some independent firm come in and actually monitor analytically what's happening up that stack. We have all that in place to do. As soon as we get an opportunity to fire it up, that's the first thing that'll be done. Air dispersion modeling is another opportunity. To date, that is not anticipated to be required. That's a computerization method of trying to figure out exactly what's coming up the stack. The bottom line to advanced environmental is, we do believe we have a very capable unit of incinerating, I don't want to call it a simple waste, but compared to some waste, it is a simple waste. It's a very easy material to burn in this unit. We have no difficulty meeting all these standards. We have no problem demonstrating to the public at large that this unit will cause no problems if we're given the chance to use it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pete, did you want to join us also? You have a representative from All American?
Good evening. My name is Joe Kapp. I'm Vice President of All American Environmental. All American Environmental is owned by Vulcan Waste Systems, Inc. Vulcan has been in business for 140 years, started out building steam locomotives way back when, and have built over 1,100 rotary kilns in the world for various industrial applications, including hazardous waste incineration systems used throughout the country. Also have supplied systems that destroy a combination of hazardous and radioactive waste. So our track record is very respectable, and in conjunction with an investment partner has a year ago proceeded with construction of several transportable incineration systems for hazardous waste. Now, I might point out that All American does not have a contract with Exxon, nor are we negotiating a contract with Exxon. About, well, back in April, we trekked out to Valdez and had a meeting and presented our offering, and as yet have not had a positive response. But nonetheless, we unilaterally submitted for our permit application. In the event that additional capacity was required, or if so, there was some other problem with one of the other units. Just a couple of key points. One, our units are designed for the destruction of the most acutely hazardous materials in this country, or in the world, dioxins, PCBs. It doesn't look like or act like a hazardous waste incinerator. It is a hazardous waste incinerator. It's capable of year-round operation to minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Mr. Dragnich earlier this evening indicated that incineration was chosen as the preferred solution because of the secondary pollution problems that may exist by leaving material stored for long periods of time. Our unit can operate almost year-round, well beyond the September 15th deadline that everyone is working towards. I think that's important. Utilizing a rotary kiln incinerator, as was mentioned earlier by AET, is a very forgiving technology. It can take just about anything. It takes a licking and keeps on ticking, and does a very good job in destroying wastes. But all rotary kiln incinerators aren't alike. Just like two automobiles are not alike, Yugos and Chevys and Cadillacs and Rolls Royces. We have some significant features that are mandated by law for hazardous waste disposal. They exist now. When I promise them to add them, they're there now. One is a very sophisticated air pollution control system, which gives you zero liquid discharge, but beyond that, has no purge water from the system. There's no liquids that leave the basic system that has to be treated or worried about. It's zero liquid out of the system. The next is that we use a very complex system which minimizes the amount of chemicals that are used in the system, the amount of waste that's generated by the system, because it's rather unique. It's been used in Europe and it's working well for DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware. We have sophisticated controls. It's mandated by law for hazardous waste. Real-time, continuous monitoring of all pollutants. What that means is you could have a modem right on that desk tied into the unit, and anyone can come at any time, 24 hours a day, and find out what that unit's doing. I think it's something you really should consider, the state should consider as a requirement, especially since it's such a sensitive issue and there's a great deal of emotion involved. I think credibility is important, and that's the best way to satisfy people's concerns. With that, I'd like to ask Ron Mader, our Vice President of Engineering, to show you what we got and explain a little more of the technical aspects of our system. Thank you. Angelo. I'd just like to briefly run down with some of the performance criteria for our system. We would guarantee to destroy the destruction removal efficiency of the hydrocarbon contaminants and any other would be 99.99%. The unit is capable of actually achieving what we call in the industry a 6-9 number, which is normally required for PCBs and dioxins, but I guess that's not the criteria requirement right here. The particulate emissions, which would be basically what you put out on the out of the stack, the unit is capable of doing up to down to 0.015 grains per dry standard cubic feet versus the state of Alaska requirement of 0.08. So it's capable of achieving well below those standards. HCl, if present, which is entirely possible because the hearing yesterday in Anchorage, it was pointed out that inadvertently you may have, say, PVC bags or raincoats or whatever which would generate HCl. Our unit is capable of removing in excess of 99% of the HCl. The SO2 removal efficiency would be greater than 90%, and all of this is achieved, as Joe Kapp pointed out earlier, with zero liquid discharge, because we use a spray dryer in the circuit in conjunction with a venturi and an absorber. The system would operate with very low stoichiometric requirements, which means that the theoretical consumption of alkali like caustic soda would be very close to one, and as a result would generate minimal amount of excess residue. The key feature of our offering, as outlined in our permit application, is that we have had concerns, as it has been pointed out by Alaska DEC, of dioxin emissions, and as a result we have followed all the necessary criteria, which I think Dr. McGee might point out later on is required for minimizing, if not eliminating, dioxin emissions. We would be operating the primary combustion chamber, which is the rotary kiln, at 2,000 degrees, followed by over 2.5 second residence time in a two-pass secondary combustion chamber. And in addition, we have a very sophisticated pollution control system, which would minimize the particulate emissions to the 0.02 to 0.03 grains per dry standard cubic feet. With all of this in mind, the potential for dioxin emissions would be practically nil. Very, very quickly, this is how our unit would be laid out on a 250 feet by 72 feet wide barge. We have procured a barge which is right now sitting in British Columbia. As Mr. Kapp had pointed out earlier, the only reason we haven't mobilized it is because we haven't got a firm okay from Exxon. As a result, the system, as you will see later on some of the slides, is in Pennsylvania. It essentially consists of a feed prep system, which would involve a shredder very similar to the one that is being operated in Anchorage and Seward. And this would essentially shred the feed material to -2 inch size, and it would be fed through the hopper through a conveyor into the rotary kiln, followed by cyclone separator to remove the particulate matter, the heavy particulate matter, and then it would go to a two-pass secondary combustion chamber with over 2.5 second residence time at 2200 degrees into an evaporative cooler, followed by a spray dryer, a venturi, and an absorber. The continuous emission monitoring on the stack involves a Fourier transform, an FTIR type system,
which would continuously monitor all of the required contaminants, the NOx, oxygen values, CO, oxygen, SO2, and HCl. This can be tied to a modem, as pointed out earlier, for online monitoring. And essentially, the barge would also include a decontamination trailer and a field office. This would be supported with adjacent barges for fuel oil storage and for storage of clean residue that has been treated. This is a bird's eye view of our unit, shown laid out with the rotary kiln combustion chamber, followed by the two pass secondary combustion chambers, hot cyclone separator, and that's the control trailer, the feed hopper, and the drag conveyor feeding material into the rotary kiln. This is another view of the same system. The vertical chamber here is the spray dryer evaporator, which is where all of the scrubber drain is fed in. And as a result, we would have no liquid discharge because the solids in the scrubber drain would come out as a dry solids discharge at the bottom of the spray dryer. What you see here is a spray dryer, and in front of the spray dryer is a Hastelloy Venturi. It's another picture of the same unit. This gives you a better perspective of the entire system. This is the control trailer, which has the control panel shown here with a flow diagram up at the top. And what is not shown in the picture on the left is an independent FTIR monitor through which the modem connections would run. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ron, would you join us up here? And is there a representative from Sealy Corporation?
Steve Beers. I'm with the Sealy Corporation, and I'm responsible for the operation of the Sealy incinerator project. Our incinerator is based around a old mine silo kiln that is 24 foot wide by 33 foot high. It's got a gross cubic volume of over 15,000 cubic feet. We're set up to feed both oily waste, and we have a 30-inch Morbark chipper board to chip beach logs if necessary and burn the chips. We can handle chips up to 15 tons per hour and anticipate 4 to 6 tons of oily waste processed per hour. The combustion principle of the silo kiln is induced air, and we have a oxygen analyzer that controls the induced air system with a 60 horse under fire fan coming up through a grating system and 4-5 horse over fire fans, all 5 fans controlled by computer through the interfacing with the oxygen analyzer. The unit will burn at 1600, 1800 degrees for complete combustion with the temperature being completely controlled by this computer, as I said before. The principle we're using for pollution control is a baghouse principle. The combustion air will go through the flue and come through a heat exchanger, where it'll be reduced from 1600 to 1800 degrees to less than 400 degrees to accommodate the bags in the baghouse. It will be drawn through a baghouse by a 250 horse induced draft fan and passed through 765 5-inch by 10-foot fabric bags designed to remove protective matter down to 1 micron. From there, the flue gas will travel towards the induced fan and pass through sulfur dioxide, oxides of nitrogen, and carbon monoxide monitoring systems, which will monitor and record 24 hours a day or whenever it's in operation. From there, it goes out the flue, 42-inch flue. Now, I didn't bring a chemist or anything, but we certainly will operate this thing within the EPA and the ADEC guidelines. It is perfectly capable of doing it, and we've got to test and find out. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. And is there a representative from the Herman J. Shellstead Corporation?
Good evening. My name is Perry Lopez. I represent Herman J. Shellstead and Associates out of New Iberia, Louisiana. The principle that Shellstead and Associates has brought to Exxon and to ADEC is a recycling and process barge. As our other colleagues with AET and All American, we're incorporating and utilizing a rotary kiln incinerator with a secondary afterburner system and the scrubber systems included. The differences that we're looking at